This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, once again, five unelected judges have overturned laws enacted by the duly elected representatives of the people. This time, it was Texas. This morning, by a vote of 5-3, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Texas's Abortion Clinic Regulation Act. We'll get the details from one of FRC's legal experts, Travis Weber, in just a moment. Also, shocking revelations from the Select Panel on Infant Lives involving the University of New Mexico and a late-term abortion facility. The facility may have provided aborted baby brains to a summer camp for youth. Chairman of the House Select Panel on Infant Lives, Tennessee Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, is here with the details in just a moment. And George Barna takes a look at where SageCons are by the number. What's a SageCon? They are spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives. George will explain more when he joins us a little later here on Washington Watch. I'll also update you on the case of 33-year Air Force veteran Oscar Rodriguez, who was physically removed from a retirement ceremony at Travis Air Force Base recently, when he did the flag-folding ceremony and mentioned God. One of his attorneys, Michael Berry with First Liberty Institute, will be here with the latest on that case. A lot of ground to cover for a Monday afternoon, but I'll do my best if you help me. If, by the way, you miss anything, check out the website a little bit later, TonyPerkins.com. We archive the program, and if you got to get gas, milk, bread, whatever, you can listen later tonight. Also, this is one of the reasons you need to sign up for my daily update and our legislative alerts so that you know immediately what's going on and you can read it each day in your email inbox. You can find all that out at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, keep up with me at T Perkins. By the way, let me just mention on the website you'll find information about the Values Voter Summit coming up September 9th and 10th. Washington, D.C. You won't want to miss it. All the information at TonyPerkins.com. All right, several important items dealing with abortion today. The Supreme Court, as I mentioned, struck down Texas's Abortion Clinic Regulation Act. Now, I passed Louisiana's act quite a few years ago, very similar to the one in Texas. But this, once again, the court's showing that when it comes to moral and social issues like abortion, judicial restraint and precedent go out the window. Now, this decision is a loss for women and gives the abortion industry basically a get-out-of-jail-free card, almost ensuring that we will have more Kermit Gosnells operating in this country. Also, a new major development out of the House Select Panel on Infant Lives, where a criminal referral has been issued to New Mexico Attorney General, detailing possible violations of state and federal law by the University of New Mexico for their receiving aborted baby body parts from an area abortion center. Joining me now with the latest on this shocking story is the chairman of the House Select Panel on Infant Lives. She represents the 7th Congressional District of Tennessee, Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn. Marsha, welcome back to Washington Watch.
And good to be with you, and thank you for continuing to follow the work the Select Panel is doing. We appreciate it.
I want to get to this shocking development out of New Mexico, but first I want to get your reaction to the Supreme Court decision on Texas's Abortion Clinic Regulation Act that was passed down this morning.
Right. We were disappointed in one regard, you know, because this is something that Texas did, that they passed, their legislature passed, and funny. As you just said, after the Kermit Gosnell case and the information that came forward there, people, whether they are pro-choice or pro-life, said, you know, there needs to be tighter restrictions, greater review, more oversight. The list goes on and on, but people wanted to see more regulation on these facilities. So that is a disappointment that they would override what took place in Texas. Now, I will tell you, one of the things that I thought was so significant, when you look at the Texas law, they have to be located to near a hospital facility or considered and regulated like outpatient surgery centers, and the Supreme Court strikes that down. So is the Supreme in detail. I have not done that yet. I'm out working in my district in Tennessee today. But maybe we can look at it and see if they consider it to be self and thereby covered, you know, considered those facilities considered able to get Title X funds, even though Title X funds cannot be used for abortion, but used on the children's health. So I think it presents a new argument and a discussion that will be worthy of now.
Yes. Well, let's move on. I want to get this story out of New Mexico, where you have uncovered more information. Tell our listeners about what is happening there.
Well, there is an abortion clinic, Southwest Women's Options, and it seems there is quite a relationship, if you will, with the University of New Mexico, and we were looking at that relationship, and we have, in the process of receiving information and reviewing information, we felt that it was appropriate to do a criminal referral back to the Attorney General in New Mexico for possible state and federal violations with the transfer of fetal body parts. And so that action was taken the end of last week. And it's the first criminal referral we've done. We have done an Inspector General referral to review some of the HIPAA violations. Did that referral to Health and Human Services.
So what's the next step here? Is this something that the Attorney General there in New Mexico is going to have to act upon?
Yes, it will be, and we'll be following it through for them to look at the documentation that we have, the possibility of the Solving the Act and the violation that could be there, the relationship between the transfer from Southwest Women's Options to the University of New Mexico and then the placement or the selling or the provision of the fetal tissue. So we have made that referral to them. We feel we're on solid footing with the documentation that we have, and we'll begin that process of turning that information to them and beginning to follow the work that the AG in New Mexico is doing.
So, Congresswoman Blackburn, what is this about this tissue being provided, in this case particular brains of these aborted babies, being provided to a summer camp for youth? What do we know about that?
Oh, what we know is the documentation that would lead us to believe that that is something that could have transpired. And what we will do is let the Attorney General take the lead in what would be a criminal investigation.
Okay. Well, we'll be, we know you're going to be on this. We're going to continue to track it. So we'll bring you back on when we have more information. Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, as always, thanks so much for joining us.
So good to be with you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Tennessee Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn. This is this information is going to continue to come out as this select panel investigates this. I mean, there's no telling where this will go. But it just is another symptom of the coarsening of our society. All right. I want to go back to this breaking news out of the Supreme Court today. Regarding the issue of the Texas's Abortion Clinic Regulation Act. I think we're going to be joined by Travis Weber, who is one of our legal experts. Do we have Travis? All right, we're going to get him in just a moment. This is very reasonable. And what it did is simply would require abortion clinics to operate under the same regulations that other surgical centers would have to operate under. I mean, as I mentioned back, I think in I don't know if it was 1999, 2000, 2001, I don't remember what year, I authored the legislation in Louisiana. It passed. It was struck down by the courts the first go around. We made a minor tweak, came back the next year, passed it, and it's been in effect. I think they actually added to it this past year. But it simply, for instance, requires that doctors, in this case, have admitting privileges at a local hospital in the event that there's some kind of problem, requires that the hallways be wide enough so that you can get a gurney through it. I mean, these are basic healthcare issues. Requires you have certain record keeping, certain sanitary requirements. When we passed ours back in Louisiana, we were able to do it because we ended up having undercover pictures taken of the rusty and dirty instruments that were in this facility. I mean, there was blood on the floors. I mean, they just didn't care for it. They didn't take care of it, and they didn't care about the women. They were interested in the profits. Same thing in Texas. Other states have gone this route since we had the Kermit Gosnell case. Texas, the legislature passed this. A district court ruled against it. It then went to the Fifth Circuit, which is in New Orleans, the appellate court. They upheld it. It was challenged then and appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court today, by a vote of 5-3, remember we have one vacancy on the court, basically showed that we just did not, you know, as they did this, they showed once again how when you get into the abortion issue, judicial restraint, it's not just abortion. I mean, we've seen it on marriage. We've seen it on many of these social issues. They just, restraint goes out the window. Precedent goes out the window. They're going to use the court however they have to get what they want to do. It's shocking in what the court ruled today. Anyway, we're going to get a legal take on it from Travis Weber a little bit later. Trying to find him. He's somewhere in the building, but we're going to get him on here a little bit later to talk about that. And this underscores what is at stake in this election. Remember, as I said, we've got one vacancy on the court. That's why it's a 5-3 decision. What's going to happen after the election? We know we're going to have one vacancy to be replaced. Could have two, three, maybe even more in an important election. This is a reminder. All right, when we come back, George Barna is going to join us to talk about SageCons, spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives. Where are they headed in this election? Also, going to be talking about a new poll out that says in some swing states, voters overwhelmingly opposed to the president in his bathroom agenda. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
What does it mean to be equal? According to the dictionary, equal means the same for each person. Last year, the so-called Equality Act was introduced in Congress by adding sexual orientation and gender identity as protected categories under federal civil rights law. This act would give special perks to some people just because they identify as homosexual or transgender. It's important to remember that many bills introduced in Congress have positive-sounding titles that hide their true agendas. The Equality Act is a perfect example. This bill puts people who live out their faith on unequal footing under the law. It imposes sexual orientation and gender identity provisions on religious schools and universities, rejects the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and so much more. FRC's new publication on this legislation is a brief summary of the dangers this bill poses towards those who hold a biblical view of marriage and the family. Visit frc.org/equalityact to learn more.
Back in 07, my father passed away. My mother had passed away 7 years earlier, and they left me a small inheritance, and I wanted to give back to AFA for all they have done for me.
Carol talks about her experience with the AFA Foundation.
I am an avid listener to AFR, 12 hours a day, and I hear Dan Celia talking about the charitable gift annuity. I liked what the gift annuity offered, donated a certain amount, and from that, I get a check every month, which is retirement income for me.
If you'd like to support the work of the AFA and receive a fixed income for life, a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation may just be what you're looking for. Learn more by contacting the Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
God reached Michael Brown with faith in Christ when he was a 16-year-old drug-using rock and roller. With that faith, Dr. Michael Brown has devoted his life to spreading the gospel and sparking moral revolution.
Well, the world continues to go crazy all around us. I'm here to be a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity.
Dr. Brown has debated Jewish rabbis, agnostic professors, and gay activists, and is widely considered to be the world's foremost messianic Jewish apologist. Dr. Michael Brown will be one of the speakers this year at the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th. Space is limited to 400 attendees, so make your plan soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 1, followed by option 2. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. And we hope to see you there.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website is tonyperkins.com. Lots of information there for you on the website. All right, a new Quinnipiac poll shows, like several other the Obama administration decrees, that the voters in three critical swing states, Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, oppose by large margin the administration's forcing public schools to adopt gender-neutral bathrooms and locker rooms. Now, how will this issue and others issues like it impact the November election? Join me now to break down these numbers and to talk about, as I mentioned earlier, the Sage Kanz is the founder of Barna Group. He's author and he's executive director of the American Culture and Faith Institute, George Barna. George, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
Hey, before we get into this Quinnipiac poll, I want to, you were in New York this past week. We were there in this meeting with Donald Trump, and you gave kind of a snapshot of where the culture and the country is, in particular, the spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives, those you call Sage Kanz. Give our listeners a quick thumbnail sketch of where things stand.
Well, even apart from the Sage Kanz, if we just look at the country, I mean, the big picture is that things are not looking good. People have less and less trust and confidence in organizations, in institutions, in professionals. Our moral standards are dropping like a stone in the sea, you know, where we find huge increases in the proportions of people saying that things like gay and lesbian relations, divorce, giving birth without marriage, having sexual relations outside of marriage, cohabitation, gambling, doctor-assisted suicide, all those things are rising precipitously in terms of people saying those are morally acceptable behaviors. We looked at the transitions in faith, and that's all kind of scary, because what we're seeing there is that people are saying, yeah, well, I'm spiritual but not religious, which to them means, you know, I look inside for truth. I'm the only one that can determine it. Their behaviors show a decreasing allegiance to traditional faith activities, such as going to church or praying or reading the Bible. The number of unchurched people has increased by 13 percentage points in the last 10 years. Pastors are having less and less influence on people's lives. Our values are shifting dramatically. The government is taking over more and more, and people aren't happy about how the government is performing. So when you look at all of these things, I mean, the only conclusion you can really come to, Tony, is that politically, Americans have to be at a place where they're saying, you know what, we need a change. Two out of three Americans say the country is moving in the wrong direction. Most people say you can't trust the government. They're not out for our own best interests. And so there's got to be something substantial, something really noteworthy that changes. We, I don't think, for the most part, are going to be willing to say, yeah, just give us more of the same. Everything's pretty good.
Well, the troubling thing about these numbers, and there's several things that are disturbing, but the fact that Americans overwhelmingly say we're headed in the wrong direction, everything is imploding, but the very thing that can turn it around is what they're turning away from. When you look at not just organized religion, but the fact that religion, a relationship with God and its influence on society appears to be what is, you know, being turned away from.
And I think in many ways that's because a lot of our religious institutions haven't changed with the times, and not in the sense of changing what we believe. I mean, God's principles are unchanging. They're eternal. We've got to stick with those. But the way that we convey these to people, the way that we see them put into practice, those are some of the kinds of things that young people in particular are struggling with in this country. They have no problem with a lot of values like compassion and goodness and even serving other people. So I think there are places where we can still start the conversation, we can build the relationships that enable the Christian faith to truly have a lasting and deep impact on people's lives. But what we're seeing is, as is true with the rest of our society, we're in an era where people are expecting turbulence and chaos and change. And so we've got to think carefully about how do we provide that to them in a way that doesn't undermine the standards and the core principles of Scripture, but that still makes it relevant to people's lives and enables them to say, ah, I see how this can work. I want to be part of that. And again, I think a lot of that comes down to relationships, and what we're finding is that the Christian church in America is not very good at building relationships with people who don't automatically embrace them.
So, George, the bottom line on your data is that this is not a time for the church to throw in the towel, but rather to put on the towel and start serving the local community and really engage in a new way that we haven't seen in years.
I think that's absolutely right. Yeah, and, you know, a lot of that has to come from this concept of having a biblical worldview, an underpinning foundation that helps us to understand what Jesus was really teaching, not to get all caught up in what, you know, our culture is interpreting it to be, or commentators, or this faction, or that niche, but really to go back to the basics and try to figure out, you know, what would Jesus do in a confusing, turbulent, you know, very rapidly changing and confusing culture as we have today? And it comes back to relationships, it comes back to service, it comes back to compassion, it comes back to truth. I mean, there are a lot of core principles that he espoused and that he showed people through the way that he lived. If we can get back to that, yeah, then I think there's a great future for the church in this country.
George, we're almost out of time, but I want to quickly, we're out of time. Hey, can you hold on? Because I want to ask you this question on the other side of the break. I want to ask you regarding this latest poll by Quinnipiac showing that the swing state voters overwhelmingly reject the strong-arm tactics of the Obama administration when it comes to the bathrooms and the locker rooms and the public schools. Is this going to be an election issue? I want to ask you that question if you'll hold on for just 2 minutes on the other side of the break.
Absolutely.
All right. All right, folks, don't go away. Still a lot to come. We're going to be getting an update on veteran Oscar Rodriguez from Michael Berry with First Freedom Institute. And then we're going to be talking to Travis still. So still a lot of ground to cover. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia. Some interesting economic news coming out this week that we're going to pay a little bit closer attention to than we might have normally as a result of what's going on in the markets around the world. But we get the last and final look at first quarter GDP at the end of the second quarter. Yes, this is it. This is going to be the final look. They're expecting about a 1% GDP growth for the first quarter. I would expect it to be below 1%. It was on the last look. It was 0.8%. We're also getting consumer confidence numbers out. That is expected to be up. Not sure how, but it's expected to be up. Again, I don't expect that to be up at all. Flat. Best case scenario, as far as I'm concerned, personal income and personal spending number comes out. They're always good numbers to look at. And it's not looking good anyway from an expectation standpoint. But even if it meets expectations, which it's not looking like it's going to, it's not going to be much because expectations for both are 0.3%. Pending home sales come out, and of course, we'll be looking closely at crude inventories. Chicago area manufacturing comes out on Thursday. On Friday, we get construction spending, and that is always an interesting number, and I'm anxious to see what that is because last look, you may remember, it was negative by 1.8%. That negative 1.8% caught everybody by surprise, myself included. So it's coming off a negative number. They're expecting about a half of 1%. That sounds about right. Should be higher than that based on the fact that it is a May number when construction seems to pick up a bit.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at tperkins. Okay. All right. George Barna stuck around because I wanted to get this question answered. He is executive director of the American Culture and Faith Institute with United Purpose. Do a lot of work with those guys. They do some great work. George probably knows the evangelical world better than anybody in the country when it comes to gauging where they're headed. All right, I want to, this was not your poll, but this poll comes out, it's very interesting. Three critical swing states, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania. The voters there by large margins oppose the administration's forcing public schools to adopt these gender-neutral bathroom and locker policies. Is this going to be an issue in the fall's election?
Yeah, it will be an issue. And, you know, one thing I would just say about all of these polls when you're looking at questions regarding transgender behavior, be careful about the polls because I've looked at a number of these now today. And one of the things that I discovered is that if you look across the different pollsters, you find radically different kind of results coming out. How's that possible? As I look more closely at it, it became evident that it's because of the wording that's being used in the questions.
Right.
And so, you know, there's some of these questions that talk about discrimination. Whenever you see a poll question that talks about discriminating against transgender people, what you find is that increases support for the kind of policies the president is pushing. When it talks about, you know, whether it's required, whether it's legally to legally prevent the behavior, you know, whether you require or you allow, I mean, all of these kinds of words bring with them some kind of bias in the answers. So you got to be real careful with what you're looking at. But the clear pattern that we're seeing is that people do not want the government imposing some kind of a mandate on how we deal with the whole transgender issue. What we're finding is that increasingly Americans, just like they were with the same-sex marriage issue, are becoming more comfortable with it the more they're hearing about it. So, of course, the media is going to keep pushing it. But the key thing here to me is that they don't want a mandate regarding this whole issue.
All right. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more of this to talk about before we get to the November election. George Barna, as always, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks, Tony. Great to be with you.
All right, thank you. Hey, folks, by the way, you can actually get this information that he puts out at the American Culture and Faith Institute. Just go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. You can actually sign up. They provide it. It's very interesting stuff. Okay. Many of you signed on to FRC's petition regarding a 33-year veteran, Oscar Rodriguez, who was forcefully removed during his flag-folding presentation at Travis Air Force Base when he mentioned God, which was a part of the presentation. Well, on Thursday, just 2 days after First Liberty Institute sent a demand letter to the Air Force on behalf of their client, Secretary of the Air Force Deborah Lee James ordered the Air Force Inspector General to review the Air Force actions against Mr. Rodriguez. So what's next? Where does this case stand? Joining me now is one of the attorneys handling this case. He's a senior counsel and director of military affairs for First Liberty Institute, Michael Berry. Michael, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's always good to be with you.
Well, this has to be encouraging news that the Secretary of the Air Force is taking actions to investigate this case.
Absolutely. It's a positive first step. By no means is this full resolution or a solution to what's happened, but it's definitely a first step towards ensuring that what happened to Oscar Rodriguez does not happen again, either to him or anybody else.
Now, there are some that are claiming that that was not the case. That's not why he was removed from the presentation. But I've seen the video. It's pretty clear. I mean, he's on base. He's in the ceremony. But it's when he starts to make his, his presentation, audible presentation that makes reference to God. That's when, four NCOs in military uniforms stand up, walk up front and grab him and carry him out.
That's exactly right. And what's telling is Travis Air Force Base itself issued a brief statement shortly after the incident occurred back in April, saying that an individual, in this case, Mr. Rodriguez, did not comply with Air Force regulations or directives about what is an authorized flag folding speech. And I think, in their words, was unfortunately forcibly removed. That's putting it lightly.
Well, we know that this was significant, that the Air Force Secretary called for this investigation by the Inspector General, because your good friend Mikey Weinstein just went crazy when he saw this. So apparently it is something of significance.
It is, and I don't want to either over or understate the significance of the Secretary of the Air Force's action. I mean, certainly in my time dealing with these types of cases, I don't recall a service secretary responding so swiftly to, to an allegation or a complaint or a demand letter, as it were, in this case. So that's certainly, again, like I said, a great first step in the right direction. But all it is really just announcing that she's directed there be some kind of investigation, right, or inquiry into what happened. And what we've asked for at First Liberty Institute is for those Air Force personnel who are determined to be responsible, they need to be held accountable for their actions.
Right. First step, not resolved, but it's a first step. Michael Berry, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate all the work that you guys do at First Liberty.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. This is far from over, folks. Far from over. We're going to talk more about this on the other side of the break. Also, Travis Weber joins us. Don't go away.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we'll visit on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon is the United States Marine Corps Memorial, also known as the Iwo Jima Memorial, built in 1954, and the largest bronze statue in the world. Stephen McDowell, who's the president of the Providence Foundation, a historian, will join us all along the way, answer questions, talk about the people, the places, and the events in our nation's capital, and then on to Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington. In addition, we'll go to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown for those who want to join us for this separate trip, which just precedes the Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon tour. For all the information on either of these tours, just visit us on the website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, this is in September. Go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com.
Stepping into the mission field is as easy as picking up a phone or driving down a new street. There are few places in the world where you'll not see opportunities for service. You may never travel to a third world country, but here in the U.S., we're surrounded by great poverty of body and soul. Learn how you can have missional empathy in the June edition of the AFA Journal. Sign up for a free one-year subscription at afajournal.org.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to take a stand and pray and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith at home, in public, and at the ballot box. And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
You're listening to Washington Watch, the website, tonyperkins.com. At the website, I believe we still have the petition for Oscar Rodriguez, where you can sign that petition. We've had close to 50,000 people, maybe more, have signed that. We're going to continue. I'll get that out. We're going to continue to track this case because this is egregious. It's a symptom of the social engineering that has been conducted by the Obama administration. You know, when you let all this other stuff in, you got to push something out, and God's the one that they've had to push out. And we've seen it in so many cases. But, again, thank you for those of you who respond to these. We're able to see success. Chaplain Motter, reinstated, still in the military. Sergeant Marchland. It's so many others that have, because of your response, we've seen them overcome the challenges that are before them. So anyway, that again, the website, tonyperkins.com. And let me remind you folks that you're able to hear this program because of folks like you who support the Family Research Council and the Washington Watch radio program. You can become a partner. Go to the website, tonyperkins.com. We'd love to have your partnership, be a part of financially underwriting and supporting this so that more Americans can hear the truth. Speaking of the truth, I want to transition now. We have Travis Weber. He is the director of FRC Center for Religious Liberty, and he's been working with our other attorneys today, tracking this decision by the Supreme Court handed down today, 5-3 decision striking down Texas's Abortion Clinic Regulation Act. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me back.
All right. We kind of went over it a little. Basically, what we have here is the court striking down this law passed by the Texas legislature, which would have required abortion clinics to have some basic provisions that other surgical centers have, admitting privileges by the doctor. What was at the heart of the court's rejection of Texas's law?
Yeah, I think, you know, at the very heart of this is a desire to oppose any laws which could be used to impede the abortion ideology that a majority of the court seems to want to advance. I think that's really the only explanation for what we see here, which is not even following the court's own jurisprudence, which is so problematic in the Casey case and Roe versus Wade. They don't even follow those cases here. It's just really kind of reached a point of ridiculousness.
And now let's talk about that for just a moment, the significance of that in our judicial system, our system of law, that precedent is something that is of great significance in judicial decisions, is it not?
Absolutely. You know, it's key to everything we do in terms of having an independent and neutral judiciary, which is able to apply law which governs all men. No man is above the law. And we need to have law that's actually governing and not just judges purporting to obey law, but merely imposing their policy preferences. So it's crucial not just to these issues, but to any issue if we're going to exist as a democracy based on the rule of law.
So a court, when it is approaching a longstanding precedent, they only change, modify, go against that precedent, I mean, in a very limited set of circumstances. I mean, it's got to be pretty significant for them to I would say violate, but to ignore that judicial precedent.
It does, and it depends on the circumstances. But generally speaking, the way we would characterize this is when, you know, that the facts are, it's really a quite new case that the precedent doesn't address clearly, or there's some significant change regarding, you know, facts and the circumstances surrounding the case in a way that which just makes the precedent no longer applicable, or it's revealed that the precedent itself was unlawful or unconstitutional. And obviously depends on what we're interpreting here, the Constitution, a statute, or something else. But at least constitutionally, the goal is always to go back to the original plain meaning of the Constitution. And, you know, it's one thing to even look at the abortion cases, because we'd say, look, there's no right to that anywhere in the Constitution. But even assuming if we're going to follow Roe and Casey, the court did not even do that today fairly and as it should have.
In fact, Justice Thomas, in his dissenting opinion, wrote that it appeared that the court was rejecting the standard that was set in Casey, because they said what he said is they were applying a strict scrutiny standard that Casey had rejected when it comes to these abortion cases.
Right. The strict scrutiny standard is the highest level for the government to have to meet before it infringes on an individual right. And that's not in the abortion jurisprudence. It's not in those cases. You know, so the court really sort of ventures off into unknown territory here on that point. And it also really engages in some sort of odd balancing test in which it instructs courts and defers to the lower courts weighing of the benefits, supposed health benefits of this law against the burden, which it shouldn't be doing. It merely should be analyzing the undue burden. And it doesn't really do that. And, you know, it's really unfortunate that we're off in territory now, which it's impossible even to know what the law really is on this issue.
So they've really muddied the water in many ways when it comes to the laws governing abortion. The judicial precedent now is very mixed.
They have really muddied it. You know, if you're going to go off the standard today, the best way to articulate it would be, okay, the undue burden of a law must be weighed against the law's health benefits, but how do you offer evidence of those benefits? How do you show that? What's necessary to show that? It's just not clear. I mean, the court basically looks at the district court level findings here and says, well, they're good enough for us. It doesn't require the petitioners to meet their burden of proof in showing that the law would have an effect of imposing a substantial obstacle in the face of these women. So it's really, you know, if you're a state now trying to regulate this for the health and safety of women, you're really in a difficult position. You've just got to make the best showing you can and hope it's good enough.
Because in the Casey decision, it was made very clear that the states had the right to provide for certain regulations and limitations on abortion.
Absolutely. You know, and the court even quotes some of that precedent today, but then it goes on to basically focus on portions of the lower court record and really isolate those and say, well, we have, the state, may be regulating for the health and safety of women here, and we have X, Y, and Z points regarding that claim. But we have all this other evidence about, how this supposedly would impose a burden on women seeking abortions, and we're going to, conclude ultimately that there's an undue burden. So it's sort of as if the court just lays out the claims and then concludes there's an undue burden without really any predictable test and, rule of law, which Justice Thomas really focused on in his dissent.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Travis Weber joins me. He is the director for FRC Center for Religious Liberty, talking about the Supreme Court decision today, handed down 5-3 decision, Whole Women's Health versus Hellerstedt. And essentially what this does is overturns Texas's Abortion Clinic Regulation Act. Now, Travis, many states have adopted those, especially in the wake of the Kermit Gosnell case out of Philadelphia, where he was convicted of murder. Where does this leave the states that have passed these clinic regulation acts that are similar to this?
Well, the cases are going to still be fought out. In some of those, you're going to have one of the party opposing the law, perhaps going back to court and filing paperwork with the court, citing the Whole Women's Health case and asking that be brought to bear in their litigation in favor of their attempts against the law to strike down these laws. But we're going to have to examine each law as it stands. I mean, here you had two items at issue, the admitting privileges requirement and the surgical center requirements. And then you look at what Texas actually, the details of those requirements in Texas law. If another state is different from those, the case is going to maybe play out differently. And then again, in those cases, the state will have an opportunity to show how this law does not impose an undue burden on women, and it really advances women's health. I mean, under basic notions of constitutional scrutiny and review, the court should have deferred to Texas legislature here. They really should have. But be that as it may, states still have the opportunity to make this showing. It's just that the court is tampering with the standard and not really being fair in how it applies it.
So, Travis, just to summarize, you have a decision that is not quite clear in terms of what are the boundaries that states can go up to when it comes to regulating these abortion clinics. That's left unclear in this. They're basically just saying there's an undue burden placed here on these abortion clinics. We're not going to necessarily tell you what that burden is, but it's an undue burden, and therefore we're striking down the law. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. And the funny thing is, we would say, okay, what's the boundary here? We would look at the opinion and say, okay, an undue burden on a woman's right to obtain an abortion. But how the court lays that out is so vague and muddied. It's impossible for a state really to proceed with any sort of clarity on this. It's just going to have to kind of put all its efforts in one basket in terms of showing how its law protects the health and safety of women and give it its best shot. But that's not how our lawmaking and constitutional review should work. It's not really fair to states or people in the states. And unfortunately, I think this issue is being distorted because the subject is abortion.
Well, Justice Alito and Thomas, in their dissenting opinions, I think furthered the narrative about how the court is undermining its own legitimacy with these types of decisions.
Well, absolutely. The dissents do a good job of pointing out the abortion distortion. People increasingly will see the court as on these issues irrelevant and lacking credibility. And it's sad because on many issues, you still have much more of an even-handed rule of law approach by the court. It's seemingly on these social issues regarding sexuality and abortion that the court sort of gets distorted. And even in this case, on a procedural issue to even hear the claim, the court really went out of its way to bend the rules to hear the claim. It shouldn't be doing that. And it just discredits our system when the court bends the rules even to hear a claim and then on the merits bends the law that should be governing the case.
All right. Travis Weber, thanks so much for sticking around and joining us today on this.
Thank you.
Travis Weber, he is the director of FRC Center for Religious Liberty. To find out more, you can go to the website, tonyperkins.com. You can also see our statement regarding this case. And I want to, just in the few minutes we have left, underscore again the importance of this. When the court becomes an activist court and they reject, as we've talked about here, legal precedent, which they've done, they did in the marriage case, they did in this case. When they come to these moral and social issues where if there's going to be change, it should come through the people's representatives, through the legislature, through the Congress. That's how you maintain this really balance in our society, is that change comes gradually if it's going to happen. I'm not sure this would have happened, the marriage. They had to go to the courts. But here we see abortion the same way. They had to go to the courts to get this. Now, the opposite is what happens when you're protecting life. It comes through the legislatures. And so, you know, they forced abortion on the country in 1973. The people pushing back, we get legislatures that adopt laws that honor life, the sanctity of human life. And what do? They go to the courts to overturn these. But here's, again, the concern, undermining the rule of law. This is what facilitates the moral and cultural chaos that we see. Can anybody say that, oh, everything's stable, everything's hunky-dory? I don't think so. And it's being facilitated in large part by the undermining of the rule of law, which is we've seen from the Supreme Court, we've seen from the Obama administration. And so if they don't have to operate by the law within the boundaries, then the American people get the same message. If Hillary Clinton doesn't have to abide by the law and how she deals with secret information, you know, why should Americans be worried? If the IRS doesn't have to play by the rules, why should people who have to deal with the IRS play by the rules? You see, I mean, they set the tone and the standard. And people eventually throw up their hands and say, you know, what's the point? I mean, it's like in a ball game, if one team plays by the rules and the other one doesn't, eventually the one playing by the rules say, what the heck? We're not going to do this. This is why you see what's been happening across the country, in particular with, one of the presidential candidates, Donald Trump, around his campaign, and why he's, I think, tapped into something is he's pushing back. And of course, you see all of the ruckus, the controversy around at some of his campaign events. It's that clash. It's a physical manifestation of what's happening culturally. All the more reason we need to pray. All right, folks, and coming up this next Sunday, July the 3rd, is a part of the call to fall. We're asking churches across the nation to take just a couple of minutes and pray for our nation, declaring our dependence upon God before we celebrate our independence the following day. You can find out more about that at TonyPerkins.com as well. All right, out of time. Glad to have you with us on this Monday. Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow. I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.